Okay, today we'd like to focus on Moses. Moses, a man of faith. Our text that Elvin just read is Hebrews 11, verses 23 through 29. Moses is certainly one of the great characters in the Bible. Most men and most women, most believers, have heard of Moses. He's the great lawgiver and emancipator of the Hebrews. The Hebrews were down in slavery in Egypt, you'll remember, when Moses comes on the scene. And there were 70 people who went down into Egypt. Actually, 69, I guess. Joseph was already down there. But they went from 70 to about 2 million in a 400-year period. You might say they had a population explosion. A few figures loom as large as Moses in the sacred writings. In many ways, he exemplified the life of faith. This great man has his name recorded in the Bible over 750 times in 30 different books. His parents were people of faith. Verse 23 says, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child or a goodly child or an exceptional child, as the NIV says. And they were not afraid of the king's commandments. The reason for that is they were down in Egypt and these slaves were multiplying faster than the Egyptians. And the Egyptians thought, well, we got to do something here. They'll become greater than we are, and we'll be the slaves, and they'll be the masters. So Pharaoh issued an edict that all the male babies of the Hebrews would be thrown in the river. Only the girls could be kept. But Moses' parents were people of faith, and they didn't pay any attention to the king's commandment. They went on and kept him and hid him. They came to the place that after 3 months they could no longer hide him. You know, a child is not the quietest creature around. So they had to do something. So they made a little box, and they waterproofed it and placed this little baby in it and put him along the Nile River banks. And of course God was behind the scenes, and someone found him and brought him. They saw right away he was a Hebrew. And someone said, shall I find someone to care for him? Moses' sister. Well, of course, she went and got the child's mother. and she cared for him, caring for her own child. Well, this is the story of Moses in that little ark. Now he survived the king's commandment that all these male babies would be thrown in the Nile River. Sort of like the edict of Herod in the time of Christ. He issued an edict that all the male children under 2 years old would be destroyed because he had heard of this baby born to be a king. He felt threatened, and he wanted to get rid of that little baby that was going to be king, so he just decided to make a clean streak of it. Well, this is the way heathen monarchs behave sometimes. How many of you know the name of Moses' parents? Think of that. Well, if you're thinking of Amram and Jochebed, you're right on target. I know that's what you're thinking. In Exodus chapter 6, verse 20, few people would remember, and I looked it up, that's how I know, few people would remember the name of Moses' parents. They sort of got hid behind their famous son, you know. That's often what happens. Sometimes, especially in the Bible, some of these famous men who were used of God in a wonderful way, their parents sort of gets lost in the shuffle. Even today, how many of us know the name of George Washington's parents, or Thomas Jefferson's, or Abraham Lincoln's? Probably a few of us. I say they just sort of get lost. They pale into insignificance in light of the famous child. Our text, as I say here, is taken from Hebrews 11, the great faith chapter. The book of Hebrews is the most theological of the epistles. in this passage, these few verses, we notice Moses doing four things. We see Moses refusing. We see Moses choosing. We see Moses esteeming. And we see Moses enduring. Let's talk about these four things today. Verse 24. By faith, when he was come of years, he refused, notice that word, to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He realized that God's hand was upon him, and he was to be numbered with God's people, so he didn't want to be numbered with those heathen Egyptians. He refused to cast his lot with them. Rather, he cast his lot with the Hebrews. You know, some things in life we have to refuse if we're going to be mighty for God. And Moses recognized that early on. The kingdom of Egypt lay at his fingertips. He was the grandson of the king. And again, notice his parents' faith. They knew that this was an exceptional child and that God had a claim on his life. That God had something special for this baby Moses. In relation to a godless government, they hid the child. They saw God and his purpose for his people. This was more important than anything else. Their relationship with God and the purpose that God had in this little baby boy. They went to the nth degree to protect him. And so God could take him and use him. God arranged, you remember, a transfer to the palace through the daughter of the Pharaoh. Here we see the preservation of this child, a life of faith, protecting this child, preserving this child, so he could be used of God in a mighty way. By faith, he refused the high personal advantage of being a prince of Egypt. Now, some would say, no doubt, how much he could have done for his people, you know, if he'd stayed in the palace. He could have preserved his own status and wealth, but every advantage gained would have bound them and himself to Egypt. And that simply was not God's plan. God's plan did not include that. Remember the Abrahamic covenant that God had given to Abraham, that all the land of Canaan, from the river of Egypt to the river Euphrates, would be given to Abraham and his descendants for an everlasting possession. Well, at this time, these promises lay trampled in the dust. And God's people were slaves to a heathen monarch down there in Egypt. God had bigger things for Moses, and he knew that. His parents knew that. So they were obedient to the God and disobeyed the king's commandment. We see Moses refusing. Number two, we see Moses choosing. That's number 25. I just want to expound on this text a little bit today. Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Moses made the right choice, not from a worldly standpoint, but from a godly standpoint. You know, some choices are constructive, and some choices are destructive. We see these young people today, smoking pot and using drugs and drinking alcohol and driving down the highway. That's a bad choice. That's a destructive choice. If we see our young people in school getting their education, in the youth groups of the church and so on, that's a constructive choice, you see. We have to stop and examine ourselves with this choice or that choice. Is this a constructive choice? Or is this a destructive choice? Moses evaluated these things and made the right choice. I say some choices can be very destructive and some very constructive. We have to decide what we want in life. What are the goals that we want to reach? And then make the choices that will help us reach them. Plug into God's program. That is top priority. Number one, what is God's will for my life? And to live a life of faith. We need to teach these things to our children, our grandchildren, and all the people about us. You know, there is no failure in God's will, and there's no real success outside His will. Moses thought it was better to suffer for the promised Christ than to own all the treasures of Egypt. He was looking for the reward that God had for him. And we do well to take the same outlook on life. Consider the reward that God has for us. Moses chose God's people and the promises of God, even though this meant affliction and continued to live as a slave. In so doing, he became the deliverer of a hopeless people. He also chose not to enjoy the temporary pleasures of sin. All the power and authority that corrupt men today lay at his fingertips. He could have chosen that direction, but he turned from that direction and cast his lot with a bunch of slaves because of faith. He saw that God, who is invisible. You know, that shows tremendous maturity. And that's an interesting word. What is maturity? How would you define the term? I read this definition in Ann Landers' column the other day. I think you will too. Ann Landers says, maturity is patience, the willingness to pass up immediate pleasure in favor of a long-time gain. Let me read that for you again. Maturity is patience, the willingness to pass up immediate pleasure in favor of the long-term gain. That's a good definition, don't you think? And you see this applying to Moses. He had all these benefits in front of him. I think it would be hard to turn them down. But he turned them down and chose what would be beneficial in the long haul, you might say. Right choices reflect our maturity. If we see people today having a job and they don't go to it, they choose to watch the football game or do something else, we would say that's a bad choice. It's a destructive choice. You can't pay the rent and keep food on the table and gas in the car and payments on the house and on the car, whatever, if you don't stay with the job and continue to have the income, you see. Then he mentions the reproach of Christ. Moses comprehended messianic truth. He knew that the Savior of the people would come, that their Messiah, their King, would come. And he saw that through faith, you see. The reproach of Christ, the reproach was born by Christ. The choice of faith in the Messiah, you see. He realized the prophecy in Deuteronomy 18. I won't turn to it, but it's chapter 18, verses 15 through 18. Where God said, I will raise up from among the people of Israel a prophet like unto Moses. And every soul or every person who does not hear that prophet shall be cut off from among the people. The Messiah, that prophet, like Moses, was to come. The Son of God, the King of Israel, the Messiah, or Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. Moses also chose to leave Egypt. Again, he refused both the riches of the land of his birth, of power
and prestige of its Pharaoh. Egypt offered pleasures as the world does today, but notice it's for a short time. Pleasures of this life for a short time. The ill treatment too would be for a short time. We would be with the people of God where a believer belonged. Friends, that's where you belong, with the people of God, with the community of believers. You don't belong in the sinfulness of this world. The choice by faith makes the unseen things of God real and glorious to our hearts. Moses' choice seems utter nonsense to this world. I'm sure of that. The people of this world say, what a fool Moses was to go with his bunch of slaves when he could have been in the palace, you know. That's the way the carnal mind reasons. I know when we left Virginia in 1954, some people thought we were out of our mind. We had a home and a new car, and I had a good job. Rachel was just 3 or 4 months old, and we pulled up stakes and moved 850 miles to Oregon, Illinois to go to a Bible college. Remember, my brother-in-law said to me one day, he said, "You've got a house, you've got a car, you've got a job." I said, "I don't figure how you're going to come out." He said, "You'll starve to death." That's what he said, "You'll starve to death." Well, I don't ever remember not having enough to eat. I remember a lot of times when I had too much, but never when I had too little. The text says, by faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Verse 6 in this chapter says, but without faith it's impossible to please him. But he that comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Saving faith, first of all, says that God is, he does exist, and secondly, that he rewards all who seek him diligently. There are many ways to please God, but not one of them is without faith. Okay, number 3, we see Moses esteeming, verse 26, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Now that word esteem may need a little study. I looked it up, and my dictionary defines esteem as set an appraisal on, set a value on, sort of like a jeweler would a ring. You can go to a good jeweler and he can look at a ring and he can probably tell you pretty accurately how much it is worth. Well, this is what is said of Moses. He esteemed these things. He appraised these things. He weighed the two courses, staying in the palace with Pharaoh or going with God's people. He carefully and appropriately appraised the issue here, the situation. Stephen, in his address to the Sanhedrin, asserts that Moses was well instructed in the science and learning of the Egyptians. Now keep your place there, but just turn back to Acts 7. This is Stephen's famous sermon, you'll remember. It's one of the longest sermons, 60 verses actually. And when he finished, he was stoned to death. You may remember that too. I just want to call attention to verse 22. In this sermon, Stephen restates the history of Israel to show to the people of his generation that Jesus Christ was the Messiah that God promised in the Old Testament. He just recounts the history of Israel here in Acts 7, a famous sermon by Stephen, one of the deacons of the early church. Verse 22 says, and Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in works and in deeds. Moses had a good Egyptian education. It wouldn't be too much to say that he had the best education available in Egypt at that time. And the Egyptians believed in the transmigration of souls. It's interesting to notice that Moses carefully avoided any reference to that kind of heathenism, but carefully records the conditional immortality viewpoint. Moses also had a good leadership ability, a good leadership skills. So God saw this was the man of the hour. You see, at that time, this was a man that God chose for a tremendous task, leading those 2 million Israelites out of Egypt, through the desert for 40 years, that barren desert, just nothing but sand out there, into the land flowing with milk and honey. The land that God had given to Abraham and his descendants. Now, perhaps the easiest way to get a picture of Moses' life is to look at all of it at once. It's divided into 3 equal parts of 40 years each. He was in the palace as a prince for 40 years. That was his training, his education. The first 40 years were spent in the palace of Pharaoh. The second 40 years was spent in the desert as a shepherd in seclusion. And that 40 years watching the sheep gave him a geographical knowledge of the desert through which he would travel with the Israelites from Egypt to Canaan. So he was already familiar with that desert when he left. And then the last 40 years was spent as the leader in Egypt. It took the people 40 years to go from Egypt to Canaan. They could have made it in 2 years. In fact, in 2 years they came to Kadesh Barnea. And they could see the land over there, the promised land. But because of their unbelief at that particular time, God let them just march around the desert for another 38 years. And then they came back to Kadesh Barnea again. At 38 years, were just wasted, wandering around in the wilderness. It's interesting to notice that for 40 years, Moses did nothing spiritually significant. That means there's still hope for some of you, some of us. We're told that Moses was the meekest man of all the earth. Numbers 12, verse 3. It's interesting to notice that Moses sinned in his strongest point. I won't turn to it, but Numbers chapter 20 and verse 10 and the verses that follow. They come to the place in the desert where they had no water. And the people were complaining. They'd been out there, you know, they were thirsty. You get out in the desert for a while, I'll tell you, you get pretty thirsty. And water is precious. But Moses lost his temper and struck the rock and said, "Hear ye rebels, you'll have to fetch water out of this rock." And that fit of anger cost him his one lifelong hope. He forfeited a trip to the Holy Land because of disobedience. Chapter 34 in Deuteronomy tells us that God took Moses up on Mount Nebo and showed him the promised land. God says, "There's the land over there flowing with milk and honey. The land that I gave to the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob for an everlasting possession. That's the land. These people are going to go over there into that land. But you are not going." And he didn't. Moses died there in Mount Nebo on a mountain. And God buried him. And no one knows where he's buried to this day. And of course today, God's saints are just buried all over the place. And nobody knows where they're buried. But God knows. And in the resurrection day, they will all come forth from the grave to life eternal. Read Deuteronomy chapter 34, especially the first 8 verses. It's the record of Moses' death and burial and Joshua coming on the scene to be Moses' successor. It was he who succeeded Moses and led the people of Israel into the land. Okay, moving on, number four, we see Moses enduring. Verse 27. By faith he, or Moses, forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Here we see Moses enduring. We see his perseverance. It seems God saying to him, hang in there, Moses. Hang with me. Jesus said, he that endures to the end, the same shall be saved. You know, my greatest need is to be accepted of God. Scripture says, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman who needeth not to be ashamed, but rightly dividing the word of truth. 2 Timothy 2, verse 15. I memorized that verse many, many years ago. Knowledge apart from application falls short of God's will. We need to know God's will, and then we need to apply it to everyday life. And as you look at our generation, you can't help wondering if any word characterizes our generation. I think it's undisciplined. Just look how people live today. They're so undisciplined. They just do whatever we want to do with no concern for the other fellow or even their own future, sometimes their own family. No discipline. It seems to be the word that just characterizes our generation. We live in an undisciplined generation. Let me say this to you. Plan to fail or plan to live by faith. Without faith, it's impossible to please Him. He who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. Moses endured. He led Israel from Egypt to the gates of their promised land. As I mentioned, the last chapter of Deuteronomy records his death, and Israel wept for him 30 days. Read the last chapter of Deuteronomy today, after you go home. Now, the passing of a great leader is always a time of crisis. The crisis is often aggravated by the absence of an able, trained successor. As I mentioned, God raised up Joshua to take the place of Moses. We're told in the last chapter of Deuteronomy, I think it is, that Moses laid his hands on Joshua sometime before his death. And it was pointed out, I'm sure God made clear, that Joshua would be the successor of Moses. The first chapter of Joshua makes that clear. In the first chapter of Joshua, God says, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, Joshua, you're the man. Rise up, be of good courage, go in and take that land that belongs to the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I've given them that land. It's theirs. The heathen that occupy now have no right to be in there. I gave this land to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and their descendants. Go in and take it. So here is a trained successor, Joshua, a military genius and a spiritual giant. And it was he who led the people into the land, destroyed those heathen tribes, and destroyed the land among the 12 tribes. You'll remember, God raised up Joshua, you see. God's program must continue. Messiah must come. And he's not going to be born in Egypt. He's not going to be born out there in the desert. God says, my son is going to be born in the land of Israel. So they need to be back there so the prophecies could be fulfilled. Messiah must be born there in Bethlehem of Judea. You notice the prophecies. I won't turn to it, but Deuteronomy 7, God tells Joshua and the people of Israel to go in and take that land. There are seven heathen tribes that occupy the land. The Canaanites, the Jebusites, the Girgashites, and all those otherites, seven of them. God says, go in and get rid of the last one. Exterminate. They didn't do a thorough job. And God said, if you don't do that, your children will intermarry with your children. And they will lead your children to serve gods of wood and stone. And sometimes that's what happened. Those heathen nations that God told them to destroy were a thorn in their flesh all their years because they didn't fulfill what God had told them to do. Further evidence of his faith is seen by keeping the Passover. Notice verse 28. Through faith he kept the Passover in the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. I won't turn to it either, but Exodus 12 is the story of the Passover. If he were down in Egypt, remember all the plagues, and now they come to the last one, and they were to leave the land, and God said, kill a lamb, each family, and put the blood on the doorpost, the side post and the horizontal piece over the door. Put blood on the doorpost. And when the death angel comes through Egypt tonight, he won't touch any of those homes that has the blood on it. But any home that doesn't have the blood on it will suffer the death of the firstborn child and also the death of the firstborn of every animal. And so it was. If the death angel came through Egypt that night, every home that did not have the blood on it, the firstborn was killed, and also of the animal, the Passover. We have a song based on that. When I see the blood, I will pass over you, a great redemptive song. It's not in our book. Some of the older books had that song, but we don't have. Anyway, that is the Passover, and that is what the writer of the Hebrews here is alluding to. The Passover, through faith, they knew that if they had that blood on there, they would be spared of the death of the firstborn. See, they did that through faith, and it worked. Every home under the blood was not hurt. Today, the illustration of that, or the fulfillment of that for us, is the blood of Christ. Every person under the blood of Christ will not be hurt of the second death. See, one is the illustration and the reality we have in Christ, you see. In chapter 12, I'm going to read verses 3 and 4, just turn over a page. Hebrews 12, verses 3 and 4. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest he be wearied and faint in your way. You have not resisted unto blood, striving against sin. Now, take in consideration here the time of the early church, these early Hebrew Christians. They were enduring persecution, severe persecution. And the writer is trying to encourage them. He says, you haven't resisted yet unto blood. What's the implication? There's someone who did. Jesus Christ resisted sin, and it cost him his life, his blood. So the writer of Hebrews said, hey, you haven't gone that far yet. So that was to be an encouragement to them, that they would continue on, you see. Moses and the people witnessed the miracle of the Red Sea. It was deliverance for Israel, but judgment upon the Egyptians. Remember the Egyptians chasing after them in their chariots? Got out there in the middle of the sea, and the water came in and destroyed the last one of them. I suspect all of you have seen the movie, The Ten Commandments. Cecil DeMille did a good job of that. How he filmed that water up here, and I'll never know, but I think that was one of the greatest works that of that nature that I'd seen. The Titanic, sinking of that ship and all that, there's some real effort went into that too. I remember well the Ten Commandments. When it first came out, we went to see it. Well, faith had directed the eyes of Moses' heart to the eternal reward that Messiah will give, as well as the present joy of being at the center of God's will. It's a sense of peace and security and joy to know that we are at the center of God's will. We are citizens of two worlds, really. We belong to God today in this wicked world, and in the age to come, we'll be with the saints of all the ages. So Moses fled Egypt went to the desert for years of training. He endured, the writer says, as seeing him who is invisible. He saw the unseen one by faith. Scripture says, no one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him. That statement is found twice in the New Testament. John 1, verse 18, and 1 John 4, and verse 12. Moses exemplified the life of faith. By faith, his parents hid him 3 months because they knew he was an exceptional child and that God had a claim on his life. They made the proper choice. Moses chose God's people and the promises of God, even though it meant affliction. Moses chose to leave Egypt. That country had been good to him, but he discarded both the riches of the land and the power and prestige of the king. I say, to cast his lot with a bunch of slaves. He had faith in God. The same trust that he had in God helped Israel cross the Red Sea, the walls of water on each side, and that Egyptian army behind was drowned. Moses' choice of faith is seen so many places in the Bible. When he was grown, he refused to be identified as a son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to share the hardships and endure the ill treatment with God's people rather than to enjoy the riches of the palace. That choice was made because faith gave him a glimpse of the Messiah to come. You know, friends, faith is a daily necessity. Whether one is getting married, or taking a job, or struggling with an illness, overcoming a handicap, whatever. It's to be a life of faith. And faith in God is the cornerstone of all other faiths. Through faith, Moses kept the Passover. That was God's way of salvation through the death of the Lamb, which was an illustration of the Lamb of God who died centuries later on the cross. Passing through the Red Sea is left as a climax of Moses' faith. I say this is seen as the climax of Moses' faith, crossing that Red Sea. You know, you come up here with all these people behind you and you're facing the sea, and God says, go on out there. It takes a lot of faith to step down and get your feet wet, I'll tell you. You just put yourself in that position for a minute, and you'll see the kind of faith that this man had. And all these men and women in this chapter, this faith chapter, Hebrews 11, are recorded for their great faith in the God of creation. The message of Exodus in the New Testament is, by faith, go forward. God has made a way. My Lord knows the way through the wilderness. All we have to do is follow. Our faith looks up to Christ as our Redeemer.